Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, a podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and y'all are in for a treat this week with Dominic Welton, the very handsome, the very charming content creator who is making content both spicy and otherwise. His YouTube channel is excellent. He's an amazing follow on Instagram. And yes, the spicy stuff is pretty delicious as well. Now, speaking of spicy, I didn't want to ask all of my horny questions during this main episode. So Dominic is the bonus episode this week as well. It was released on Monday, so you can go to Substack to watch him talk about a very hot bathhouse story along with all of my incredibly nosy questions. That's substack.com/@EricWills, where you can also find a lot of other great bonus episodes as well. Enough from me. Let's get into this interview with the handsome Dominic Welton. Dominic Welton is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Dominic, I have followed you for many moons, and now I'm interviewing you on a gay ass podcast. How gay has your day been? Has it been boring and straight or delicious and gay?
I mean, I went to Starbucks and got a haircut, so...
Wow, I didn't know they were doing haircuts at Starbucks these days. I love that. It's actually a great haircut. Is your barber a gay person or straight girly?
You know, he's not gay, but he's very gay friendly. Got a lot of gay clients.
Straight.
He's an ally. He's an ally. So he takes care of me.
Is he cute? Do you ever fantasize about what would happen?
No. I don't fantasize, but he is cute. He's got a very like Silver Lake kind of guy look. He's a dirt biker. Wears a lot of Carhartt, you know, so he's kind of got that aesthetic. He's cute.
I'm down to clown. So you got the Starbies, you got the haircut, but I am a gay journalist, so I'm already going to start with some hard-hitting questions. Dominic, you have a tattoo on your side that is Hebrew.
Fuck.
Oh no, is this a terrible question to start us off with?
So that tattoo was the first tattoo I ever got when I was 18, and I've regretted it every day since, especially because it doesn't mean what I thought it did. Thanks.
Oh, you
Google
got one
Translate.
Of those. So it like means like spaghetti and meatballs.
So
let me just tell you why I'm asking you.
Go for it,
it's not like gotcha. It's truly not supposed to be gotcha journalism. I just am a Jewess who, whenever I see any reference to Judaism, I was of course like, oh, maybe he's like a secret bar mitzvah boy. But no, you were fully 18 and you thought it meant what?
Okay. So it's so stupid. It's so stupid. So I was 18 and I thought like, oh, first tattoo. And I, for some reason, thought I would get it in Hebrew because I don't even know why. I didn't think anybody would be able to read it. First off, I thought it would be like just something to myself. And then I moved to LA and everybody's like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, that doesn't mean what you think it does. It was supposed to be a quote about strength. So, and even the quote about strength in my head, like it doesn't really make sense the way I thought. The quote is supposed to read, you're stronger than they are. And it was supposed to, in my head, refer to when you face difficult like trials and situations in life, you're stronger than they are, like you're stronger than what they face. It's not talking about like other people or anything, but I guess it reads, you're strong, they are. That's at least what people have told me who can read it. And so I just keep it, you know, covered up. and it was...
Well, it does look good. Very good. I just... And it could have been a lot worse. At least it doesn't mean, like... I don't know, like...
Anything else.
That, it could have been something either stupid or offensive, but it's just, like, grammatically a little incorrect. Thank God that's as worse, the worst that it got. Because you are stronger than...
Then
they are.
They are stronger than they are. Yeah, it sounds really pretentious, I think, when I have to tell people about it. But
don't you think at 18 years old, you're allowed to forgive your 18-year-old self? I think that's
you are.
The most important.
You have to
lesson.
Have some grace. Got to have some grace for them.
Well, that's a part of what we do on this podcast is try to like give grace to our younger gay ass selves. So before I ask you the famous podcast question, can you tell any of the listeners who don't know? Obviously, you are an incredible creator online. Your YouTube videos go way back, and they're really excellent. And you've got an excellent OF. What's the journey, though? 18 years old to now. Where were you geographically at 18? And how did you become the gorgeous gay-ass hoe you are today?
I grew up in, born in Vermont, grew up in SoCal. I grew up mostly in Temecula, which is in between San Diego and Los Angeles for people who aren't familiar. I was super, my family was not religious or really conservative, but when I was in fifth grade, my best friend at the time, his parents were senior pastors of a church. So I got like sucked in heavily for over a decade.
Shit.
I used to like teach at conferences and camps and I was like heavily involved. I worked there. I thought I was going to be a pastor, like this whole thing. Towards 18, I graduated at, I think 17, because my birthday's in September. Graduated high school and I'm like, I don't know about some of this stuff. It's not really aligning and people couldn't answer my questions. And there was a lot of stuff that kind of went down. I left my church at 19, I think, kind of was like this fallout in a way. And then I came out at 20, I believe. And
that was a fast fall from grace, as they might say.
Well, I knew I was gay, but it's just like, you know, you have one of those moments where you realize you have to put yourself first. And I was like, nothing is more important at this moment in my life than my own happiness. And I can either go down two paths right now. I can either stay exactly where I've been, surrounded in this little bubble of people, have this be my entire life, or I can like see what else is out there, you know? Yes. And thankfully, I have an insanely supportive, loving family who has my back through anything. And so I knew I could rely on them, even if I kind of lost everything else. So I came out at 20, and then YouTube was like a bigger, I don't know if it was a bigger thing back then, but it was different. There was a different culture. And this is right around the time when coming out videos were a thing, you know, Choice Yvonne had his and then everyone else. And so for the first time in my life, I kind of had something to look to from people that were my own age, like, oh, this is kind of what other people are doing. And that gave me some confidence. And then I started my own channel like 12 years ago. I think one of my first videos was my coming out video, and then moved to LA. And that was over a decade ago. So I think I've been in LA for about 11 years now. And now I live a very gay life, thankfully.
Thank God. I mean, was it a mega church that you were a part of?
It wasn't a mega church, but it was like a non-denominational Christian Pentecostal kind of
style
church.
Were they okay with gay people, or were they telling us we were going to burn?
They didn't talk about it that much, but if you ask them about it, they were like, well, you know, look in the scripture, you know, it's wrong. And it says this, this, and that. And the reality is you don't really understand when you're so young, but the people that are quote unquote leading you, they don't know anything more about life than you do. And most of them are, at least where I was, uneducated in a lot of ways and just repeating doctrine that they don't even understand. And so it's a lot of like one-liners and what feels good to say. And, you know, and I think people love going to a space where there's community, and the community aspect of church, I think, can be good for a lot of people. But unfortunately, a lot of things that you're taught can imprint on you so much shame and guilt and all of these things that you have to recover from later as an adult if you get to the point where you can actually work through some of that stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Some people are not even able to like get to the point of unlearning that. They're just in those bubbles of I'm meant to suffer forever. But I do think it's like a privilege to be able to like move past that, because at the end of the day, a lot of gay people, I think, know deep in our gay guts that we're meant for bigger lives, not bigger like in any sort of, I mean, bigger in just like bigger experiences, like a range of experiences. And you were like, I think I deserve more. And thank God you listened to the gay siren call. Well, Dominic, I am going to ask you the famous podcast question because I feel that in my bones. So that question is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame even, babe?
You know, I had two answers to this. Okay. Obviously, we have Chris O'Donnell from the 1997 Batman and Robin film, of course. Huge. But you know what? And I feel like this is a very common gay experience when you're younger. Just walking through the underwear aisle, like a Target or something like that, and just seeing all the like the models and, you know, their underwear and the bulges and stuff like that. Something just sparks inside of you and you think, I think there's more to life here.
there's gotta be more to life. We might actually say there's crossover between Chris O'Donnell and the underwear aisle, because the underwear aisle is showing us the quote unquote perfect man. You see like a bit of ab, of course you see bulge, and Chris O'Donnell in that suit was giving ab and bulge.
It was insane. Whoever was the costume coordinator was clearly gay, or they knew what they were doing.
Oh, well, I think the whole team, I know the creator of that is a fucking huge flamer, and it's so similar for me. But if I could give you a Sophie's choice, if you could choose between you could only touch someone's hard nips or cup a delicious bulge, where are you touching?
Obviously the bulge.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That wasn't that
hard.
And
I don't even care how big it is. I would rather cup it than grab a nip, you know?
Of course. Yeah. You just enjoy sort of the heavy,
let me just put it in my hand. Yeah.
Just let it rest.
It's fine.
When you did finally come out, was your entire family at like totally cool from the get, or was there a bit of a period where they had to come on board?
To be honest, so I've got two biological sisters now, and I say that only because now my dad remarried a few years ago and I have three stepsisters. So they weren't there at the time.
Yeah.
But my two biological sisters, totally cool with it. Very supportive of it. So loving. And my dad, super welcoming about it, super loving. He actually had started, I was working at his law firm at the time, like just folding like letters and stuff like this, trying to make some money when I was 20. And he would bring me back magazines from the courtrooms that he was going to. And there was always one or two of like the gay magazines, like Gay Lifestyle or Out. I don't know what it was at the time, but he was like sneaking those in there. And so I came out to him and he instantly just like hugged me, you know, gave me a kiss. And he's like, of course, I love you. And I'm like, did you know? And he's like, fuck yeah. I'm like, since when? And he's like, since your last girlfriend. And I was like, oh shit. Okay.
When was your last girlfriend?
It was, so I came out, I think at 20. So she broke up with me at 17. I think we dated for a year and a half. And then she was like, I can't do this.
And she knew deep down.
I think she did. She reached out to me after I came out and was like, hey, like I kind of figured, but you know, wish you the best. And then she actually came to visit me a few years after that. And we went to the Abbey together in Los Angeles, went to some gay bars, and we're friends on Instagram. And, you know, I'll message her off and on and, you know, check in and make sure we're doing well. So she's amazing.
Well, I want to shout out her, because the girlies that dated us gays really were doing the Lord's work and were our safe spaces. But also shout out to your fucking dad. I mean, he's slip in some gay mags and to give you that kiss and say, of course, I love you. And I knew, like, there are so many dads that are obsessed with masculinity. And I don't know, you present as someone who like would make sense in a church environment. You would make sense with having a girlfriend. Like another dad would be like, no, that's my fucking son who's supposed to be straight and do the straight things that I did. But he sounds like he just immediately embraced you. And that is a good fucking dad.
Yeah. You know, we have an amazing relationship. And growing up, we didn't have the best at times because he's like a lawyer and he can be, at the time, he could be very like matter of fact and stern and like all of these things. But at the end of the day, you know, one thing he would always tell us as kids is like, there's nothing more important than family. He's like, family always comes first. And so for him, he's like, I don't care what my kids look like, who they date, whatever. Like it's your job as a parent is to support them and show them love. And, you know, he's real with us if we're making like stupid fucking decisions. He's always going to be honest with us, but he's always going to support and love us first. And so for that, I've always been incredibly grateful because, you know, like growing up and going through like the church and all that stuff, I saw these other parents that were really involved. And I had kind of always been like, oh, you know, I wish my parents were like this. And I would like, there were other people that I idolized. Yeah. And I didn't realize at the time, like how good I actually had it until I stepped out of the environment. And when real life came along and I wanted to be who I was and all this stuff, I was like, oh, all along, like, no, they were actually the example. And I was just kind of sucked into something else. And now I look at those parents and their relationships with their kids are not good.
I'm sure they're fucked.
People I went to church with who have other lives that I know are gay and are closeted. And it's just like, they've never had that ability to kind of be themselves. And so I know I'm incredibly blessed and lucky to have that because it's a privilege.
The fact that parents can let their kids do the searching, like your parents let you do the church thing and then find your way out of it. And like my parents let me do as much theater as I wanted, but sort of gave me my own space to explore. It is a really great thing that parents can do. But I'm sure your family, since your dad is so into like the family unit, I'm sure they really were a huge part of your cancer journey when you were diagnosed with testicular cancer. Was that just like a moment where they really rallied around you?
Yeah, I mean, that whole thing was so crazy.
How did you find out you had cancer? Can you help any of us ball people with balls?
That whole thing was so crazy. So I knew something was wrong. I think I was diagnosed in 2017. 2017, like October. And I had been taking myself to doctor's appointments for about 2.5 years prior because I knew something was wrong. And none of the doctors were able to diagnose what it was. They were like, oh, you just, you know, it's epididymitis, which is this thing with the vascular, you know, in your veins, and then it's this or it's that, and they're like, you know, you'll be fine. Like no one took it seriously.
Can you say what was wrong for two? Because the reason why I'm getting a little nitty gritty is that I've had what I'm about to tell you, I have not even told my family because I didn't want to give them this stress. So like, if any of them are listening, I'm great. We're good. We're gravy. Right. But I had also something down there that they said was an epididymal cyst. And then they did not know what it was after that. And I've had 3 ultrasounds and I've basically been cleared for now, but.
Okay. Amazing.
Yeah.
So we were kind of in the same situation, not to scare you, but like I was kind of in that situation and but I never felt anything. Like I didn't feel a cyst. I had pain and I had pain in like, my left one's gone, but so it was probably coming from that one, but I had like, I had pain and then my testicle became really sensitive. And so it's like, I couldn't really like mess around with it, touch it, whatever. And then there was a period where I started getting nervous and I was like, okay, I need to take myself to the doctor. So I went to the doctors. They did a lot of feeling, you know, cause I went to see urologists and they were like, nothing's there. You're fine. You're healthy. And so that happened for about 1.5 years. And then I was like, well, this is getting worse. The sensitivity is getting a lot worse. Mm. I would be, you know, occasionally like hooking up with a guy or something like that. And, you know, if they went near my balls, like when that they touched that one, I was like, fuck, like, you know, and I felt bad. I don't want to like ruin the moment, but I'm like, you can't like, it's too sensitive. Like you can't touch it. And then, I took myself to about 2 more ultrasounds over the course of, you know, that following year, nothing. And then all of a sudden it was like it felt like overnight, but when I felt my left testicle in the middle of it, I felt what felt like a marble. And it was probably this big. If you're listening, not on video, it's like, I don't know, a quarter inch or something, you know, whatever. But all around, it felt like the size of a tiny marble. And I was like, oh, that's something. So I went to, this is how crazy it was. Because I'm taking myself to appointments by myself. I go to the ultrasound tech. And they're not allowed to tell you, the tech isn't supposed to tell you anything. That's how it goes. And I know that, but she did it. And then I said, just be real. I was like, girl, be real with me. Like, I've been doing this for a while. Like, is there something? And she goes, don't worry. It's nothing the doctor can't fix. And at that point I knew, oh, okay. So there's something. And she's like, I'm just telling you, cause like I have a son of my own. So I have a follow-up appointment literally the next day with a doctor. And it was like straight out of a movie. It was crazy. I'm sitting on the doctor bed thing, you know, whatever those things are. And he walks in and he says, all right, so we're looking at cancer. Just like completely without saying anything else. And I say it was like a movie because it was one of those things where in a movie, someone says something and you just completely tune out. Like he kept talking and I was like, my brain just kind of shut off. I didn't really know, which sucks because in that moment you need to know what the doctor's saying. And most of the time, I'm like not comprehending what they're saying to the degree I should to like relay back to my parents or something. And so I was in surgery within 2 weeks, I think. Did surgery, removed it. And I didn't have health insurance at the time. So I had fallen under like the free health insurance. Thank God. Like, I don't know if it was Obamacare or like whatever. So it was covered, but it was like in this dingy fucking bunker of a hospital cellar, and the guy like stitched me up with staples, and I was like, why is this the Middle Ages? Like, what are we doing here? And he was like, well, I did that so that my students can take out the staples and learn. And I'm like, fuck you, dude, like stitch me up like how it's supposed to be. So, you know, I did that whole thing, and yeah, I mean, it was, that's kind of how it went down. And that's then I had insane. To do a little chemotherapy and radiation, not a lot, just one, I believe it was one or two really intense sessions, and then it was done. So I got out of that pretty, yeah.
I mean, that's the very good perspective when you look back, is of course to be thankful for how it did go down, because
just,
you know, the older we get, you just hear so much more about our own friends, family members, having health scares and really awful health situations, then when it happens to you, it does feel so surreal. And I find it interesting that, especially like as gay guys, so much of our identity can be about sexuality in a way, especially as we like weren't able to live in our, have our own adolescence.
Right.
And then as an adult, for you to deal with this, I was watching one of your videos that you talked about. It really affected your self-esteem and your body image. And you were able to, once you did join OnlyFans and actually start to make money, then pay for the surgery to get the implant, which is, I think, kind of a interesting way to look at OnlyFans, because I know that there are people who have judgment and whatever about that type of work. But in a way for you, it had like a much deeper meaning.
Yeah. And I think when I've talked about that before, people roll their eyes. They're like, oh, really? Like, you know, your OnlyFans has been this like mental health thing for you to help you. And I'm like, no, it actually has. Cause I, you know, they didn't give me an implant when they did the surgery. They said it wasn't possible. And then later I found out from another doctor, he's like, no, they could have done it like at the same time. And so I was like, you know, riding.
Yeah, I think fuck that hospital is maybe how I feel a little bit.
Totally. And then, so I was like riding with one nut, you know, for 2-3 years, whatever, however long it was, 4 years, well, 17 to 21. So yeah, 4 years. Yeah. And then my OnlyFans enabled me to pay for surgery to have an implant put in, which I didn't have to, right? Like, you know, you don't need it, and I'm not incomplete without it, but just for myself aesthetically, you know, you miss how your body used to look, and you look in the mirror every day and then you see something different. And so it did definitely give me more confidence, which was good. And so, you know, it's just a way of taking care of myself. I'm like, if I'm going to go through cancer and then I've got the money now to do this, like I'm going to take care of myself and I'm going to do this. So
100%. I think that anybody who rolls their eyes about what you've gained from OnlyFans is probably just dealing with their own insecurities or shame. Because I think that what I, I love about your journey is that you can go from this like religious sort of experience and then be somebody who, from my perspective, is an OnlyFans creator, you know, has sex as a part of your identity and job, but also you really present yourself online as like a really grounded, full human. You speak to your whole experience. You're very full, you know what the fuck I'm trying to say. You have a lot of dimensions. yeah. And so I think that when you do talk about this cancer journey, I think it really humanizes you in a way. But let's get into some horny topics, if you don't mind.
Let's since do
you
it. Do yeah, have, bring it on.
And for anybody listening who is a Substack girly, we're going to be doing an extended episode to get into the really horny shit. But I, of course, want to get into some questions on the main pod. In one of your YouTube videos, you talk about gay gyms in LA. Yeah. Specifically, you talk about how the Crunch WeHo did shut down their steam room. Was that hard for you personally, and how are you holding up?
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
I've never used it, so I'm doing okay.
How do you feel about steam rooms in gen?
So I've got mixed opinions, but it's just for me personally. I don't have anything against them or, you know, what people decide to do in them. My thing is like, I hardly ever cruise. And so if I want to, I'm going out of my way to do it. And if I am going to go have that experience, typically I like to do it not in my city. I want to go do it if I'm visiting San Diego or Palm Springs or abroad, because I can have a fun experience knowing I'm not going to run into people that I know or I see every day. So it makes for a less stressful experience and a more enjoyable experience, because there's the promise of something completely new and not the anxiety of, oh, there's my neighbor. There's, you know, like somebody I see every day. And like, so I have never used it. I've never even used the showers at Crunch. I'm just kind of there to, you know, work out. And it's been like that at every gym I go to. I mean, I used to shower at Equinox, and I talked about HiMAT in Los Angeles. I used to shower there and do all that. But at Crunch, I kind of just keep to myself. But I think people are doing okay. They still have the sauna, just not the steam room.
So just sweating their balls off while they're jerking or circling. Since you mentioned Palm Springs and other cities, I was just in Palm Springs for Memorial Day, and a friend of mine was talking about cruising, and he said that there's a specific park that has a bathroom that, like, if you walk in, there's like windy, it's almost like a hallway to get to the actual bathroom, which gives secrecy and coverage, and he'll just go in there and like get his dick sucked, like, when he's just like wanting a morning release. Yeah. Where do you?
That's
like
a no from me. My anxiety would be like, I'm going to get murdered. Like, I'm going to get shanked to death.
Shanked, so, or arrested. Where do you like to cruise in Palm Springs, or what type of place?
So I will, like, if I'm visiting somewhere, typically I'll just open like Grindr or something like that. But if I quote unquote cruise, it's because I'm going to some sort of like spa, you know, kind of environment that I know is very gay. Or if I've like gone abroad and I know there's an actual bathhouse, like, yeah, that's its thing, then I'll go and do that. So I'll go to a setting where I know this is where it's happening, instead of trying to guess, you know? So yeah, I guess you could say I'm not really like a traditional cruiser in that sense. Cause I never know what's going on.
I
don't know.
I think bathhouse is kind of actually traditional. I think in terms of,
okay, we're talking, yeah, that about, like, feels the gay, more safe. That feels more safe to me. Like, well, I can judge that a lot better.
Yeah. And I feel like our forefathers our four daddies were cruising in the bathhouses while Bette Midler sang, and you were just honoring your heritage by going to the bathhouses. I'll ask more about what you're doing at those bathhouses when we do our extended moment, just so I can, you know, try to keep things classy here in the main. What about, there is a story that you told about going to a warehouse party where you took Molly and it was way too much Molly because the other people doing it were like kind of old workhorses in the Molly world.
Right.
Is it still true that you have never done Molly again since that harrowing experience?
Yeah, never. I did half a pill of ecstasy, I think that same year in Vegas at a pool party in Vegas, and it was amazing. And I have since been offered to do Molly probably 50 times since, because it's been years. I mean, I think that was 2017, 2018, something like that. But I had a horrible experience. And now, I mean, I just do edibles. So it's like I'm comfortable with it. I'll play video games, watch a movie. I have these edibles I love now, which they're only 1 milligram of THC, so it's almost nothing, but it has 20 milligrams of CBD.
Oh.
So it's enough to lightly take out if I want to like go to a bar or go to dinner, or, you know, something like that. And once a year, I'll do like a mushroom chocolate bar if I'm in the desert in Joshua Tree. So not the whole thing, just like a little square.
I love a mushroom moment in a Joshua Tree sitch. Absolutely. Have you had any sort of like therapeutic or deep thoughts or connections that have happened when you've done mushrooms in Joshua Tree?
Yeah, I have. Actually, now I'm thinking about it. I mean, every time I've done mushrooms in Joshua Tree, Joshua Tree is one of my favorite places in the world. I have a Joshua Tree tattoo.
Oh, I love, yeah.
It's like a spiritual place for me. I feel so grounded. One of the reasons you go, at least for me, is because I'm disconnecting from everything else.
Yeah.
So staying at a house, and it's just me, usually my four closest friends, and the desert. So yeah, I've had some pretty great moments there with my best friends. My best friend who I live with is my best friend of 18 years. Mm. We actually met in that church, both escaped.
so we call that trauma bonding.
Right. So, and he's like my brother. So we had an incredible like experience in Joshua Tree together. Just this like moment of connectedness, feeling like we were both like, it's hard to explain. We saw these two Joshua trees and we were just like, oh, this is like us. Like it was just, it's a moment hard to explain.
No, I'm into that shit. Cause let's just take a quick step back about the drugs of it all. I think that LA and also gay people, there's like a bit of, there's definitely substance issues where people rely on it. And I don't co-sign that. And like, I smoke weed and I have never even like done coke or Molly or I've never done most of the stuff. Do I have curiosities? Absolutely. But mushrooms, love. And when every time I do them, if it's like a more than just a tiny bit, I will get really anxious. Then I'll cry, usually about like feeling misunderstood by like my family or something. And then once I get through that release, it's the happiest I've been in a long time. I have no anxiety. So when you talk about you and your bestie seeing the two Joshua trees and you're like, that's us, I get it. It's a fucking real healing plant that I think when done like with the people you love in a safe place and done like a responsible amount can be kind of like life-changing. My other question I had is when it does come to your OnlyFans, what I feel inspired by in your work is that you don't seem to carry too much shame about your sexual identity. And especially as someone so close to your family, what is the relationship? Like, does OnlyFans come up when you're talking with your family? And I know you've said in your videos that like they are supportive, but has it always been the case that they were like completely at peace, or did you ever feel like you had to explain yourself?
I mean, there was definitely some explaining in the terms of it's this new thing that they don't know what it is or understand. It's kind of like when YouTube was slowly becoming a job for me, my dad was like, well, I support it, but I don't get it. You know, like, what do you mean? You're like making videos and you can survive off that. But yeah, my family know all about it. They know it's my full-time job. They know I'm always like doing stuff for it. They don't know every piece of content I'm making, and they don't obviously want to see anything related to it, right. But they'll see like the Instagram reels that I make about it. But all my family is blocked from my Instagram stories. So if I post like a thirst trap or something that's promoting it or whatever, like they don't see any of that, and they're supportive. I mean, it's the same thing. My dad and my stepmom, Melissa, and my mom, Tara, they're all like, as long as you're healthy and happy, like that's what matters. Obviously we want you to make good choices. And they were very real with me, just like, you know, my best friend. And when I was talking about starting an account, about the risks associated with it. And I think if you don't think there's any risks associated with it, you are a bit naive, because there are, you know. And going into a business like this, no matter what degree you decide to jump in, you have to know there are risks associated with it, stereotypes associated with it. And it becomes your responsibility to, you know, decide in moments when it's appropriate and right to kind of inform and educate people, and then learn how in other moments to completely reject other people's opinions and point of views about how they think you should live your life, or the stereotypes and assumptions that they're going to put on you. I would say I'm pretty good at that, thankfully. Like, I've got a very thick skin, and to be honest, like, I simply just don't give a fuck what somebody who I've never met has to say about me in a negative way. Tom Holland did this interview sometime this year or last year, and he had a quote that I absolutely love. And he was like, if you have a problem with me, text me. And if you don't have my number, you don't know me well enough to have a problem with me. Oh, and I was like, I feel that, because my close friends and family will let me know if there's ever something I need to rethink, or those are the people I go to. And I love constructive criticism, like on my YouTube videos. If you guys have thoughts, please share them in the comments. I welcome all comments. Let me hear it. Even like the hate comments and stuff, occasionally it's like, bring it. Like, I don't mind. Share your opinion. It's an open forum, right? Like, free speech.
Probably comes from though years of you doing YouTube and like, right, seeing people, because I feel like I'm starting to, my skin has gotten a lot thicker over the years. And that probably is the same for you, I'm sure.
Yeah,
it was different from the beginning.
For sure. I think it hurts more at first when you're slowly growing. And I don't have the biggest following in the world, right? Like, I'm kind of just like passing through in a lot of ways. But I welcome every comment, but I get to decide which ones I assign value to. I get to assign which ones have meaning and purpose for me. So I'll read all of them, but most of the hate comment ones, I either laugh at, or they're like in one ear, out the other, because I know it's not going to have an impact on my life the way that they may think it is, you know? And so type whatever you want. Like, I don't give a fuck.
Well,
I'm just going to do my thing and like focus on that. And, you know, that's what I'm doing.
By the way, that quote, that Tom Holland quote, is really spot on.
It's good, right?
Think that it's really good. Cause I think first of all, we're living in a world where so many people have opinions that they're able to like let us know about.
Yeah.
And if you don't have my phone number, then I'm not going to give a fuck about what you're saying about what I'm doing, unless it's like, you know, 100 people saying the same thing. But there are some really nice comments that you do get. One comment on your YouTube channel, someone said, I'm 74, lost my partner of 33 years, but I'm human, male, alive, and need some sexual presence in my life. Let's face it, at 74, the possibility of finding another partner that I really want to be with is next to none. Sex with myself is what I've got, and beautiful young men like you make it pleasurable. Also, seeing and hearing you here makes the OF experience with you seem like being at least with a friend. You're providing a great service for a lot of us out here. Thank you.
Oh,
isn't that great? It's just like,
that's so sweet.
I think people can really judge, look down upon, or belittle any type of creator, whether it's OF or me doing a fucking web series called Confession Hole in a Glory Hole. Like, I was out at a bar last night and someone said something very nice to me about how like that show is not beholden to a brand or like NBC or whatever, and it's like able to actually talk about things in a refreshing way. And it's a compliment that I really like appreciated, because I do think that whether you're a content creator or a comedian or whatever, like sometimes people can say like what you do doesn't matter or it's just easy and stupid. But there are people like that who are watching your stuff, whether it's YouTube or OnlyFans or otherwise, who are like getting very meaningful value out of it. So it probably feels great to know that.
Yeah. I mean, it's really humbling because my whole reason for starting a YouTube channel 10 years ago, whatever, was to share my experience in the hopes that it may help someone who was in my position. And I feel like as a creator, I never want to lose that, right? Like you can get so obsessed with, oh, this video didn't perform well on views, or this video didn't get as many comments. And it's like, who gives a fuck? Who literally gives a fuck? Like if one of my videos has 3,000 views, it's like all the people I went to high school with. That's a lot of people. That fills up an auditorium, you know? And when it comes to people's opinions and stuff like that, I mean, yeah, I just like, yeah, I just don't care. I care about opinions in the sense like I care about the content I put out and if people are getting something from it. But I think what I'm trying to say is if I'm not for you, that's okay. Like not everybody's going to like me or like my content. It's not going to be for them. They may find it annoying or whatever. That's okay. Don't watch it, you know, but like that you don't have to, it's not made for everybody. If you get something from it, amazing. If you don't and you hate it, that's okay too. You know, like
I'm trying to learn that. Please
everybody, you know?
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, yeah, that's kind of the beauty about putting your own shit out there is that it is not for everyone, but it is for people who really get your shit. Here's a question I love to ask for people that like, is it an inappropriate question? Yes. But do I like to ask it? I do. And it's talking about money. Okay. You were able to pay for your surgery via OnlyFans money. So obviously you work hard, you put shit out there and hopefully it seems to be fruitful. What is something that if you like get a big boost in either subscriptions or you're feeling really good financially, how is Dominic treating himself with a purchase, whether it is a clothing item, a food moment, a travel moment, a sex worker? What are you doing?
So when I first started my OnlyFans, it was the first time in my life that I actually started to make like good money.
Yeah.
My YouTube channel, I was doing brand deals and making like a little money from AdSense, but it was only enough to ever keep the lights on. So when I started my OnlyFans, the first big purchase I made was that surgery, which was life-changing for me. And then to be honest, like that first year, I was not financially responsible. And I think it's good to like talk about that because I feel like this happens a lot. Like people make real money for the first time and it's so exciting and you think it's always going to come in and it's not. And, you know, I probably should have put more money away and done other things, but I traveled a lot. I took my parents to Paris for a week and flew them out and did that for their anniversary. I took my best friend to, we got like VIP passes to a UFC fight for his birthday and flew out to Texas and stayed at like the Ritz-Carlton or
I'm starting to understand why they're so supportive.
Right. right. They're like, yeah, like keep doing, you know, collabs.
If you want to get punched in the hole, I want to go to Monaco, bitch.
Totally. So I spent it mostly on friends and family and experiences. Yeah. Like that was my way of really, because like that's living to me, right? Everything else, you know, and I bought some really stupid purchases. Like I bought some like Gucci and Balenciaga shit that I wore twice. And I'm like, this isn't me. Like I bought it because it was the first time in my life that I could. And I'm like, oh, it's like kind of cool to wear. And then now I'm like, I don't give a fuck about any of that stuff. So the first year was a big life lesson for me in what matters and what doesn't when it comes to that. And a lot of financial lessons that I'm so glad I learned in my late 20s instead of later in my 40s. So that was the first year, kind of the type of stuff that I was doing.
I can't wait to compare notes with you once I say that I make good money, you know, because I was talking to a friend yesterday who's like making much better money than he was. And he was like, I got to tell you, like, I don't feel like emotionally any different. It's like, because I sometimes think that once I make big money, I will feel X, Y, and Z. And I know that's not the truth, but it is also pretty badass to be able to make money from the content you are putting out, period. And I really,
it's very freeing. It's like always been my goal is that freedom of schedule just alone to be able to create content anywhere. I refuse to be tied to somebody else and their permission or rejection for what I can and can't do with my time. So
well,
I'll like
full transparency.
Sell shit on the street if I need to not do that.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was like going to say is that I've been hustling for so many years to be able to have my own schedule and do things like this. And I'm like on the precipice of being able to I have a corporate side job that's like very part-time, but I'm just like feeling hungry for that full freedom to fully invest in my stuff. And the people who have joined the Substack have made that, you know, possible. And this podcast is now 4 years old and it's all like, you know, can take a long time, but I think that's the most exciting part about like making money is the autonomy that you have and control over your own life.
It does take time. Like I had a lot of full-time jobs while I had my YouTube channel. And it wasn't until I was about 6 or 7 years in that I was able to move to part-time job and do the YouTube channel. And the only reason my OnlyFans was successful is because I had built a social media presence for almost 10 years. So wow. It's like, it doesn't happen overnight. Right. So it's like,
Thank you for 10 years
of work built the audience and the foundation to where when I was finally like, hey, I have this, I had X amount of followers already. So like it takes time. And like your path and your journey is like completely your own, you know, so you are on time, like you are on track, like you're not ahead or behind, like you're exactly where you need to be. So
I really am breathing that in. And because I need to tell I think a lot of us are like feeling behind or comparing or I sometimes see people that I went to college with and it's not luckily I'm not like constantly plagued by like compare despair, but you know there's this moments where something pops up where you're like, oh god, should you be embarrassed at where you're at? And I usually don't, but it's great to hear that your journey like took all those years.
Yeah, and it takes as long as it takes.
It takes as long as it fucking takes. Well, what's taken me is the next podcast question, Dominic Welton, that is controversial. I'm going to ask you now, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
So I don't really know if this is what you mean, but the first person that comes to mind is Cher. Does that count?
Snap out of it. Cher is a character actress, and she is a divine answer that we have not had on this podcast, I don't think ever. Tell me, Dominic, what's your relation to Cher, and why are you saying hair?
Well, I've always loved, for some reason, the movie Burlesque. So, like, I just watched it, like, 2 weeks ago with some friends, and every time I see Cher, I'm like, I just wish she was like my grandma, you know, like no offense to, you know, I'm not trying to be ageist or whatever, but I mean, she is.
No, the woman's fully
like I would love to have her as my grandma and I just see
she's
her.
She's 79.
Like, yeah. Like she gets it, you know, she doesn't really give a shit about dumb things and she's talented, but she's real. And I'm like, I just respect her, you know? It's like,
yes. I also think that you're landing on something important, which is, of course, her filmography, Burlesque being the most important. I think we can all agree. I think that she also tweets sort of stream of consciousness that shows her not giving a fuck. And when you are Cher bitch and not giving a fuck, it's like she has to have been this way her whole life. That's the only way that she has become the icon that she has. And can you imagine sharing a joint or a glass of rosé with Cher and just giggling with and hearing her fucking stories? I just am so obsessed with that woman. And shout out to Burlesque as well, because there's a new West End musical that I know a couple of people that are a part of. Past guest of this podcast, Jake Dupree, is in the Burlesque musical that's opening in the West End. So maybe it'll come to LA, Dominic, and then I'll join your gaggle and take the 1 milligram THC and then we'll bliss out.
Perfect. That would be honestly incredible.
Okay, great.
I'm glad that was a good answer. I was nervous about it. I didn't know, but
Okay. And I don't fuck around about character actress answers, and Cher is so good because obviously my burlesque comment about that being the most important film is not the truth, because she actually, her filmography is kind of insane. When Moonstruck came about, and then so another gay side question. Did you ever see the Cher musical called The Cher Show?
No, never.
I saw it on Broadway. It's three Chers who each play Cher at a different part of her life, and they're talking to each other on stage. It's one of the campiest things I've ever seen in my life. I've probably talked about it on this podcast a baker's dozen times. But in the musical, they talk about her getting nominated for an Academy Award and then getting snubbed, and then her wearing her crazy outfit and relationship shit, and just like her life. It's unbelievable to see that she is still kicking, and I hope she lives forever. If anybody can live forever, it's Cher.
Please. I hope that bitch never dies.
I hope that bitch never dies. Well, Dominic, it has been such a goddamn pleasure having you on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And of course, we're going to record a bonus conversation for the Substack bonus ep series. But before we get over there, can you tell the listeners here where they can follow you and if there's anything you'd like to plug?
Okay. It's just my name. It's just Dominic Welton on Instagram. I have a TikTok, but I never post on it, and it's Dominic Welton on OnlyFans. I also have Twitter and Blue Sky, but like, I don't post. Twitter's too much for me to be on. There's too, it's like always end of the world, like dark, horrible things happening. I'm like, I gotta pause. But it's just my name. So,
all right. Dominic Welton. It's all linked in the description. Go follow. Go watch his videos on YouTube. They're all excellent. The camera quality, I don't know what the fuck you're doing, but it's
On the YouTube videos?
Yeah, on the YouTube videos. It's divine. Oh,
thank you. That was like, took me a long time to figure that.
You figured it out. The lighting is great. Yeah. The editing is great. And everybody, go support. Go follow.
Thank you.
And come on over to the Substack to hear some horny bathhouse questions.
Substack. I don't know what we're talking about, but it's whatever it is. It's worth it. Come subscribe.
Listen to the man. Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode with Dominic Welton, feel free to subscribe on Apple or Spotify, wherever you listen. Or if you're watching on YouTube, drop a comment and let me know you are here and you are queer, bitch. I would also advise you to go to Substack because Dominic still has more interview there and she is horny. That is substack.com/@EricWills, where there's some spicy questions that he answers and he gives a really good lube recommendation that I think you should get into at substack.com/@EricWills. Hope you're having a gorgeous gay week, and if you could just do me a really big favor, stay gay.
Bye.
You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.